numbers.
Hey guys, welcome to another Cleveland Moto Podcast, episode number 443. Light them up, boys! Yes, this is my it's my very first Christmas ale since July. So I'm seasonal.
This is gonna be my first drink that can fuck me up in a long time.
Whoa.
Uh-oh.
I got liquid THC.
Oh no way.
I mean, I just have to do that. No.
Wait a second. No, now, Sleepy, that looked like a lot.
That did look like a lot.
It
is supposed to be like two drops.
Double burst of love there.
My wife doesn't put that much artificial flavoring in her water.
I know.
Put a little bit of squirt in that each eye.
You know what? Yeah. You know what?
Up your nose a little bit.
Worst case scenario, we'll put you a sleeping bag over in a corner.
I think I'm okay.
I do love that now THC comes in a little handy container.
Yeah.
And that I can't buy menthol cigarettes in California.
No.
That you can buy THC that can literally, you can keister it, you can put it wherever you want to put it.
Now it makes my fake beer into something fun.
I was okay. We're going to work our head around that one.
You know, I was going to give Phil crap about Christmas beers before Halloween. But
right, exactly.
However,
this is the only type of Christmas celebrating I will do before Halloween.
But when did Great Lakes...
Lowe's would argue with you on that.
Oh, yeah.
When did Great Lakes release their Christmas beer?
I don't know.
It was, October 1st or something like that?
Ugh. Yeah. Probably.
Yeah. People, come on.
So my general feelings on nutmeg in general is it should be available to the general public all year round anyway. You just don't have to call shit Christmas ale.
Right.
You know, you want to call it East Indy Spices, that's fine.
Right. I didn't know people still called her nutmeg. I thought it just became Meg after college.
Oh, you know.
If you called it pumpkin ale.
Call it Peggy.
And then just switched it to Christmas ale.
Right.
I don't think anybody would.
Nobody would fucking care.
Right.
Nobody would care. And you'd get the girls in the tall boots to buy it. Right.
Yeah, but have you tried wearing Uggs in July?
Yeah. All right, to my immediate left.
Chris Smith.
And to his left.
Steve Sleepy.
And to his left.
Johnny Mack.
And to his left.
Pete Hemphlin.
He's back. And to his left.
Dan Kroemke.
Behind the bar tonight.
Tom Pennington.
Hey. So.
Serving up some fine Uranus liquors.
Uranus liquors. So I've always seen, if you travel the Midwest, sooner or later, you will drive past a billboard that says Uranus fudge.
Yep.
Okay. Or Uranus fudge if you want to be.
Yep.
Yep. The best fudge comes from Uranus.
The best fudge comes from Uranus.
Yeah, right? You can't get it. And you'll see the billboards about 1,000 miles away from wherever
it's kind of like Bucky's, where it's, you know, only 475,000 miles to Bucky's.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's what it is. But I've never stopped in. I've kind of chuckled at it. I saw the thing, but yep. I've never had the extra time on my hand to basically go into a place that is a one joke wonder.
Yep.
Right.
This sounds right up your alley. It sounds like Johnny Mac is like, check.
Oh.
So how is Uranus?
So Uranus actually is really interesting. Like it's the perfect tourist trap.
Okay.
All right. We didn't get there in time because they have a tattoo parlor that wasn't open yet. And they have some like museum stuff and everything else. But the entire thing is literally a Uranus joke.
Yeah.
And they play it like this is, if there's any one reason for you to stop in Rolla, I think it's Rolla, Missouri.
Okay. All right.
Which is just east, like two exits of, there's a army base there that is MPs and engineers. I cannot remember right now. But you go in, and it literally is a tourist trap gift shop.
Right.
Okay. That has keychains and t-shirts. We got a hoodie. Yeah. Obviously got the Uranus Liquors sign. And the Uranus Liquors Blueberry Moonshine.
Okay. All right.
So they're glad you stopped in.
They're glad
you emptied your wallet.
They're glad we stopped in Uranus.
That's a really good question, because if you stop and drop $100.
Well, keep in mind, this is also on Route 66.
That's right.
This is legitimately, because the frontage road is Route 66. So this is one of those stops, if you're going to make the epic trip,
right?
This is the reason. It's like the giant dinosaur motel and everything else. This is just another stop on Route 66.
Got it.
So when Becky was in Uranus, did she think it was like nice and warm in there?
Or? It was climate controlled.
Did it smell good too?
Dude, it's a fudge.
Odiferous.
It's literally a fudge factory.
Oh, okay. So she really enjoyed Uranus.
She really enjoyed Uranus. She bought it. Like I said, she bought the hoodie and she bought the sign for the bar.
Now, I wonder if you could ride a Janus to Uranus.
Janus to Uranus?
Seems like an obvious place to have a Janus dealer.
It is on Route 66.
No, but they do sell Dickens cider.
Yeah.
Of course they do. You could have your Dickens cider Uranus.
Yeah.
Yeah, there you go.
Gotta love those Dickens.
Well, we beat that one to death.
We beat that one to death. Yeah. We truly fucking murdered that one.
Moving right along.
Jesus Christ.
All right. So the first shout I want to give, because, again, I do want to give service to our Patreons, because thank you, guys.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you so much. It's badass.
I felt like we could linger in Uranus all day long.
I know you'd like to. Deano Circo. First of all, he says, I wanted to give you guys a belated thanks for letting me drop in into the podcast last summer after stopping by the shop. After years of listening. Oh, good.
Nice.
After years of listening, it was really weird to find myself sitting there. The fact that you let an unknown oddball from Maine just jump in was a great testament to your hospitality, or a clear indication of your lack of good judgment. Either
or
way,
both.
I had a great time and I appreciate it. Now, if you don't remember, Deano, he's the one who brought us the Maine Beaver Management sign.
I remember that, dude.
That we thought was a fake sign, but it's a real sign.
No. Phil. It's a fake sign.
Yeah.
Because if it's a real sign, that's called evidence.
That's true.
No, but he worked for them.
He did.
This was a decommissioned sign.
Never mind.
Well,
this was a legally obtained
decommissioned beaver sign.
Yes.
Apparently somebody decided there had been enough beaver control in that area.
Yeah.
Took the sign down, and Deano brought it to us.
Yes. We didn't need to control those beavers anymore.
For the record, it was legally obtained.
Okay. Right on. So if anybody's listening, it was legally gotten.
If you know anything about beaver, you know it's very uncontrollable.
Yes. Right. And that it doesn't take much to ruin things entirely. So
what you're saying is all the Patreons that aren't above the $10 level are not going to get any of
these
podcasts.
They're not getting any of these jokes. Yeah. But what I really wanted to let you know is that your show, beyond what you may expect, can pop up as important in odd ways. Consider the source. As you may have seen in the news, Maine is struggling through the aftermath of an unspeakable tragedy. While my family is fine, the damage sits on our doorstep. We're talking about a shooter, active shooter, lots of people, right?
Terrible stuff.
I'm Army reservist, right, with AR. He says, the damage sits on our doorstep. I was in Washington, D.C. for meetings when the news broke. That necessitated a 14-hour drive home through the night. As you might imagine, a mind can be hard to keep controlled in a time like that. When I couldn't listen to news anymore, I turned to the podcast to distract myself. Even laughed a few times. I know it may seem trivial in the grander scheme, but on the drive last night, I really appreciated your work more than usual. Also, episode 415 does hold up. I still have a bone to pick with Chris. So,
I don't know what I did.
We got to go back. We may have to give that one a quick listen. So, but anyway, thanks
really cool.
to Deano. And maybe in today's bad news on every channel situation, maybe a podcast with a bunch of idiots gives you the kind of relief you need to have a good fucking day.
I just think when people hear us, they go, my life's not that bad.
Oh, yeah. It could be worse. I could be one of those guys.
All right. Here we go. Now, would you like to hear a professional member? I mean, a professional member of the motorcycle maintenance community?
Yeah.
Chime in to our podcast?
Yes.
You're going to let that go without a member joke.
You know what, Tom?
Yeah.
You might get called on the carpet in this one.
Oh, God.
All right.
Here we go.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Oh, good. Hate mail.
Yeah. Well, maybe not hate mail, but maybe educational mail.
Mm-mm.
If you're not careful, you might learn something.
Yeah, I think learn something.
As a rule, nobody's ever, except for John, nobody else has ever claimed to be, you know, the perfectionist.
Hey, here we are. Good morning, gentlemen. That's CF Moto Kawasaki Tech here. Oh, remember the guy said he has to go into work every day?
Oh, gosh.
They work on blown up motors?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just watching last week's podcast. People do watch it.
See?
I've told Sleepy that I thought having a video camera running was the equivalent of a security camera.
Because
we're not exactly jumping around here. There's no dancing in the podcast.
None of this is admissible in court.
Right. This might, in fact, burn the screen in on your TV if you're not careful. Okay. There's way too much to cover in a message here on Patreon.
Oh,
if we ever hire another mechanic, I'll have to come down and talk about it. But just to quickly touch on a few things from my 10 months of experience working at this dealership, with full confidence, I would recommend a current 2023-2024 CF Moto over a Kawasaki motorcycle or side by side.
Wow.
No, that is that's a good statement.
Okay. In regards to most of our staff quitting.
Oh, God.
Because remember, he brought that up.
Right, he did bring that up.
We attributed it to ZF Moto. Mm-hmm. That's not right. We will sit corrected. in regards to most of our staff quitting, it was a management issue, nothing related to the product.
Okay.
Most of our staff also included salespeople, back end, et cetera. Lastly, I mentioned the warranty center case gasket. Up until roughly the 2021 model year, the V-twin side-by-side engines used a paper gasket in the middle of the engine case, which over time results in oil leaks. CF Moto has corrected this issue 22 plus models and is using a more modern layered metal gasket now. Just wanted to clarify, by my book, CF Moto is better than non-Japanese Kawasaki's.
Well, that is a very fair statement, yep. And it's a really good testament to CF Moto, because we've been talking about this nonstop.
Well, see, now I'm really interested in that
you're right.
$4,000 fucking bike.
I'd like to make a comment about case gaskets, and that like Yamaha back in the day never even used a gasket. Maybe a little bit of sealer.
Smear. Yeah.
And the that was machine the services, that was just about it.
I mean, Ducati likes to not use gaskets, but that's for an entirely different reason.
It is. Yeah, it is. Well, it's job security.
Yeah.
But I do feel like some of today's episode is going to be, we're going to be eating a little bit of crow, right? I wanted to start the dinner of crow
this. I'll go get the Tony C's.
Right? So this is great, because this is a guy who is a paid CF Moto mechanic,
yeah,
a paid Kawasaki mechanic, giving us his feedback. And I like to also comment that the time from declarative bullshit statements made by our podcast to somebody who actually we know who chimes in with the truth, very short.
Mm-hmm.
Good. So if you are listening to this, that's what Patreon's amazing for. You know, you can have your voice heard pretty fucking quickly.
Oh yeah.
If you want to take issue with us.
And what's cool is it's firsthand info. It's not it like, is. Well, yeah, my buddy is a mechanic and he told me, like, it's him doing the work.
I love the fact that he is a guy who does get paid to work on these bikes 8 hours.
I mean, we could sit here all day long and read all the glowing reviews, but you know, we choose to just make sure
we get glowing reviews.
Anytime we have a bad, you know, somebody wants, we always make sure we get that on there.
We do. Yeah, we do. And that's why I really wanted to make sure to give these guys their voice, because they are going to the trouble of helping us with a couple of bucks a month.
Yeah.
We could at least fire them up.
This is
what's
why
this guy's last name?
Who? Swanson? Yeah, so our next letter, Swanson. Tool cocksucker. Swanson. Yeah, so Dave Swanson. Now, David Swanson went from being a listener to being a guy who bought a bike from us. And that does happen occasionally. I thought it would be fun. So he writes in, "Hey Phil, I'm just dropping you a note to say how much I enjoy the G400C and he's got a Liberty 150. Now you guys remember my badass Yamaha big wheel 200, the TW 200 I rode in here.
Yep.
This is the previous owner.
Oh,
the reason that bike is so nice is because this guy put all those mods on it and really made it beautiful. It really did a good job with it. He says, I've been riding the shit out of them. My only problem is deciding which one I'm going to ride today. Welcome to my world. Both of them are running great and functioning perfectly. I was wondering if you still have the TW200 or did you give in and sell it to Dan? Well,
still waiting.
It's in the queue.
I just want to say thanks again for setting up with two of the funnest bikes I've ever owned. And Dave Swearingen, right back at you, because the TW200 is absolutely one of the most fun bikes that I've ever owned. And it's my third one. And if you buy the same motorcycle three times, it must be a good motorcycle.
And it doesn't have the GN400 motor in it. That'd be great.
Hey, you know,
you could probably find a blown up TW200.
I've had three Honda Magna 750s at some point, so I don't know if that applies to everything.
No, the Magna's not like buying a bike, it's like adopting a puppy.
Yeah,
okay. I do still in my garage. You've been in my garage. Yeah. I still have in my garage holding up a shelf, like being used as a structural member of a shelf in my garage, a Super Magna.
Oh, yeah, you do. I saw the exhaust pipes.
So you're pulling in you watch me pulling in the garage, and there ain't a lot of room in the car garage. Like, so when I pull in there, I'm looking at my right mirror, my wing mirror, to back the car in, and what I'm using as a reference of how close I need to move the car in so Merritt has enough room to open her doors is one of the rocket launcher exhausts on a Super Magna. And I cannot take the Super Magna out without taking the Vespa that's on the shelf that's above the Super Magna down, because the Super Magna has somehow become a load-bearing member of that shelf.
It's now static display.
Well, I bumped it one time going in with the car that probably shouldn't have fit in that part of the garage. And when I bumped the Magna, because the peg on the Magna stuck out just a little bit, past the 2x4 that was holding the shelf up. So the peg stuck out like 2 inches, you know? And it, when I was backing the car in, I clipped the peg with the tire of the car and the whole Magna shifted. Just saying a lot considering it's had 2 flat tires for about 14 years.
So you're telling us you scraped the pegs on a Magna with 2 flat tires?
Yeah.
And you found a usable, a valid use for a Magna, too.
For a Magna, too. Yeah. That's exactly right. Wow. Well, the Magna moved about 4 inches, which kicked the support, the wooden beam support that was right next to the peg. Well, that kicked that out. So the shelf dropped about 2 inches with a bike on it and 400 pounds of other shit. So when the shelf dropped, it dropped right onto the master cylinders on the handlebars. The master cylinders are holding that shelf up right now.
You just gained 4 inches in your garage. That's that. True.
So I had to go in and I literally had to take the peg off the bike because the peg was out in such a dangerous area that it was prone to get hit again. There's no light on it or anything. So I took the peg off, put the peg on the shelf, grabbed the shelf, and dumbass me, like, I give the shelf a test wiggle. You ever give something a test wiggle and then think like, wait a second, what if it would have failed?
Right. Yeah.
I was next to it. Had I given it a test wiggle and the whole shelf would have ripped off the wall.
It would have given you a test wiggle.
It would have buried me. I'd be dead. Yeah. Because I gave it the test wiggle like a fat raccoon were to jump on it or something, right? In my garage. And when I gave it the test wiggle, I was like, yeah, that's good. That's that Magnus, because the front tire is flat. It is, you know, and I'm pretty sure the forks are probably bottomed out at this point. So, okay, I think we're okay.
Aren't they mangled a little bit,
dude? The forks? No, the forks are fine. It's my rear rim that has a 90-degree chunk taken out of it from hitting a curb. So the
A solid rim, right?
Yeah, solid aluminum disc, yeah.
So you were backing up when that happened?
I was backing up when that happened, yeah, of course.
That's skill.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
And to be
honest, I still do that every single day, too.
And, like, and to be honest, to replace the rear rim is the cost of a Super Magna. So
I found the rear rim. It took me about 7 months to find the rear rim of a Super Magna, thanks to our friends at Borez Motorcycle Parts out in Huron. Now, the front fucking rim, which is a 5-spoke and a big pizza cutter style, not so easy. But I did learn that Honda also made a motorcycle called the VT800 Shadow that nobody ever talks about. And Honda did make a VT800 Shadow, and it uses the exact same front rim as the V45, a.k.a. 700 Super Magna. Mm. Yeah. So not technically a V45. It's not a 750. But anyway, pretty fucking cool. So I was... Anyway.
And it's an odd non-related thing.
Yeah.
His last name was Swearengin.
Swearengin.
One of my doctors from New Orleans and one of my friends I used to hang out with on Mardi Gras, his last name is Swearengin as well.
Hey, man. He might have friends in Deadwood.
Yeah.
A long, long time ago. All right. So since we're in the habit of eating crow on this podcast.
Uh-oh. Let me get another beer.
It's okay. A few podcasts ago, well, running for several podcasts, John Sleepy and I had a really good time taking shots at Barber. John, how many times have you been to Barber?
None.
All right. Sleepy, how many times have you been to Barber?
None.
I've been there once, and I wasn't there during vintage days. I was there as a appreciator of the motorcycle static displays, right? So we're not really qualified to talk smack on Barber, but we really love AMA Vintage Days.
I am. I'm qualified.
And so...
I've seen the videos. You can... Like, here's the thing.
Yeah.
I look at videos... Mine or others of vintage days, and I go, fuck yeah, that looks like a good fucking time.
Yeah.
And every video, let me say this, 95% of the videos and every one that I watched started off with some guy going, Tuesday was our first day at Barber. And so at that point, I'm already gone. Like, and it's just dudes walking around, grass showing off motorcycles. Okay. I didn't see a burnout. I didn't see a boob. I didn't see anything.
All right.
Bleh.
Well, so...
That's my opinion. Until it
didn't I go. Saw a lot of boobs at Barber.
Tom just not the guy. Has been to Barber many times.
Yep, sure.
Pete fucking worked at Barber.
I did.
So, Pete, tell us what you were doing at Barber.
I've picked up some part-time work with a vendor that operates the BMW demo truck.
Ooh. Harbor already sounds like work to me.
It was a lot of work, I tell you. We worked some 12 and 14 hour days for a week solid. It was a lot of work. But
how many bikes did you get running in that 14 hours?
Did we get running? They were all running, buddy.
See, Barber sounds boring already.
Yeah.
How many bikes?
The bikes work.
How many they have there?
Over 100. I don't know what the count was.
Whoa! BMW had over 100 bikes there for other people to use. What's the deal?
I don't know what the full number of the demo fleet was. I had a very myopic view. I was in charge of signing in and out the CEO for electric scooters. Myself and one other guy.
Right.
And they told us from day one that whatever job you're assigned, the first day you'll be doing it for the duration of Barber. So I had an area of responsibility about 20 by 20 square feet.
Okay.
And these electric scooters came and went from that square footage the entire time. So that was my myopic view. Now, I did see plenty of cool stuff driving by.
He was you in Laguna Seca when you met.
Yeah, it's the exact same job. Scooter fucking wrangler.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I did. Scooter wrangler. It's my job. Prep them, make sure they run. Scooter wrangler. So for people that don't know, the BMW CEO4 is not actually from Earth. It's a future scooter that somebody dropped off here back in Egypt when the aliens came around the first time. They've been hiding it, and they just recently allowed it out where people could see it. It's a pretty fucking cool-looking bike. I mean,
okay, everybody remembers the R1200C, which was BMW's attempt at making a chopper. Because they watched too many American movies, and they built the R1200C. Yeah, they're like, oh, we can do that.
BMW wanted a Sportster. But they
made a BMW Sportster.
Right, yeah.
This is what happens when you get a bunch of Germans in a room and go, look, we're going to watch Judge Dredd.
Yeah.
This is the Lawmaster.
I think it's a really good-looking bike, personally.
I heard it referred to as the Tron bike all weekend.
Tron bike is a good way to put it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Is that seat as uncomfortable as it looks? Because there is no sculpt to it at all.
Yeah, I'm sure Pete rode it once or twice.
I did. I rode it, I rode it all over Barber, but I also rode it from the west side of Birmingham all the way out to Barber Track, which is on the east side of Birmingham.
Yep, Leeds, Alabama.
25 miles across town on the interstate.
Oh, shit.
And it's advertised to go 75 miles an hour. I can tell you to go 79 to 80.
Good job.
But it stops right there. It just like shuts off at 80.
Yeah, it's got controls.
Yep. But extremely long wheelbase, extremely low center of gravity. It's 509 pounds, I believe is what the weight was.
I think it's bigger than what it looks like in the picture.
It is.
It is.
Looks like a small thing, but I looking at it, but I think it's bigger. It'd be interesting to see a picture.
Yeah, what size are the wheels?
With a person on it.
They're pretty big wheels. 15-inch wheels.
Wow. Is that a hub center, or is that actually driven?
It's driven.
Okay.
Yep. Wow.
But it there you can see a good picture of the portion with the guy on it.
Yeah, because normally the guy looks way too big on it.
Right.
And with every scooter that we've experienced that has the feet forward riding position, you can't actually put your feet forward.
I can't believe they would make a bread loaf seat like that with no back to it.
Have you seen the seat on my brand new Triumph Scrambler 1200?
That's true.
It has all the design of a book.
Yeah.
It is flat, completely shapeless.
Is it just a piece of fabric stapled to a sheet of plywood?
No, John, there's 1 inch of memory foam on top of that.
Yeah, but it's brown.
It is brown.
Well, there you go.
Yeah. It is brown.
Yeah.
So now when we're looking at the BMW CEO4, there's these little weird side panels under the butt part of the seat. Now, do those fold out? Are those where my mouse is right now? You can see that there's a strange thing coming out of the side of the motorcycle above where the passenger would put their feet.
That's aero, dude.
You think that's active aero?
That's how you call the EBM.
I thought that was extra armor to cover the battery.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool looking bike. So you were in charge of wrangling these things.
Yeah, we caught the grab and go. So it's not an escorted ride. You just sign a guy out and he goes out on it.
Oh, really?
Pretty much a lap around Barber and then comes back.
And did you have a whole whack of chargers there to
There were some chargers over in the paddock area, so occasionally we would ferry a bike over there to recharge it. But I can tell you that the bikes generally ran from morning when we started to rise at 9 till 4 in the afternoon without a recharge, but we would go top them off just so they wouldn't go dry.
Yeah.
And we would rotate the bikes. We didn't want them all to draw down at the same rate. And you're sitting there with six empty bikes, so we would rotate them through so we keep them topped off. We'd take a couple over at lunch and then leave a couple over there overnight so they would start in the morning with full charge.
Did you get to play with any other BMW equipment while you were there?
Yeah, I did actually. So we had to ferry 30-some bikes from the west side of Birmingham from a warehouse over to Leeds where the Birmingham or where the Barber Track is. And then we would get ferried back over in a minivan. Six of us bring six bikes over, go back, get six more. So the first day I was down there, that's all I did was ferry bikes back and forth and got to ride everything from the CEO4 all the way up to like a M1000, I guess I read an S1000R. I did ride an M bike later in the week, but rode the R9Ts, rode the GSs, pretty much got to ride anything I wanted. A couple R18s, which are fun. Out on the open road. You're going to do canyon carving on them, but it's a big, heavy bike, and it's kind of not my style of riding. Generally, I do a lot of GS riding, but I do enjoy riding the R18s when they're available when I'm working.
And that, ferrying all these bikes around, riding a hell of a lot of different bikes that all happen to be BMWs.
Yes.
You had to be pretty fucking happy about that.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the payoff to working the 12 and 14 hour days, because some of the work is absolute drudgery where you have to clean 100 and some bikes, set up a bike wash, and there's 6 or 8 or 10 people working, but polishing the bikes, topping them off with fuel, checking all that tire pressures because you're putting customers on them, so everything has to be squared away.
Were you happy with your compensation package? I mean, did you get in free? Was it?
Yes.
Per diem.
You didn't feel like, man, I'm a half a step away from a volunteer. You feel like...
No. This is a job. This is a real job.
This was worth doing.
So
this, I know you're retired, so it's not... Yeah. You're not doing it because you need to live on it.
Correct.
But you also don't want to just work your nuts off for nothing.
No, correct, right. It gets me out of the house for a getaway weekend, and BMW makes all the arrangements as far as transportation, hotel room. You are paid, you're fed.
I was going to say, how's the food? Did they have like a big spread for you or anything like that?
We had box lunches. There was hotel breakfast and then box lunches, and then we were on our own for dinner.
Okay.
By the time I got back to the room at 8 o'clock at night, I was eating peanut butter sandwiches and falling asleep. It really wasn't a chance for going out for a good Southern barbecue or anything. I guess I could have, but
They have Dreamland in the pits.
I did eat Dreamland the very first night I was down there on Christmas recommendation.
Oh, yep. Really?
Yeah, Dreamland barbecue.
Dreamland usually has a couple little outposts around Barber.
So what did we learn? We learned that Barber so far is 16-hour workdays, tired, and in the hotel.
Bad. It sounds like a lot of work.
So I'm waiting for the fun stuff.
I'm going to go back sometime when I don't have to work.
Right.
Everything I got to see, but not really experience, was it was like you're there, but you're not getting the full experience. I mean, I got to do cool stuff, but I didn't get to do everything.
A couple of times the best part was when I sold my TDM and I bought my buddy.
Yep.
Because that was that year. I was like, I am getting rid of my TDM. I am never going to finish it. I now have walking cash. I hate walking. I bought a buddy.
Right.
And so getting to ride around up and all the little campsites and everything else and not spending all your time in the freaking swap meet, there are a lot of little tiny areas. It's not the chaos and not the getting your arm broken at Mid-Ohio, and there's not the side-by-sides acting like jackasses.
Right.
And nobody's in a golf cart. Well, there are very few golf carts. But... for the most part, it's kind of a casual, laid-back kind of experience. And then you get to be surrounded. Because there's a lot more vintage bikes that you're not going to see at Mid-Ohio. So if you're into it to look at something you're not going to see just everywhere, that's where you go. But there isn't a burnout pit. There isn't a guy. There isn't the captain.
Right.
There's not a rock and roll. Well, for a while they had the Ace Cafe Corner.
Right.
And they had bands all day, and it was a cool little area where you can hang out and everything else. And then they stopped all that because I don't know what happened, something happened. And then this year apparently they had another thing take over that whole area, and it was no longer a separate thing. It was just everybody all come. Which I was kind of looking forward to see, but you're right. We were spread too thin.
It looks to me like the BMW representation at Barber was fucking huge, because this is
was this their national rally?
No, it wasn't a national rally. This was BMW, because the national rally is put on by the BMW Motorcycle Owners of America, which is an unaffiliated club. It's a it's a private club, not necessarily affiliated with the corporation.
Okay.
This event at Barber was a corporate presence.
Okay.
And they rolled out the absolute red carpet there. The CEO of BMW North America was there. Muckety Mucks from Germany were there. Because this is the 100th anniversary of BMW 2023.
Oh.
1923 was when they came out with their first bike.
Okay.
So this was the 100th birthday party. And this Motorrad Days is the main German BMW event. This is the first time they did Motorrad Days in the United States. So it was Motorrad North America in conjunction with Barber Vintage. And BMW was the main sponsor of BMW or of Barber Vintage Days.
Okay.
This year.
So they were the marquee sponsor.
Correct.
What now is this Motorrad Days that happened that you were there? Is that replacing the day they would normally have in Germany, or is it just they've added something to the
additional parallel
good,
too?
Good, excellent.
Yeah. But here's the big hook this year. BMW just released the 1300 GS, and the world debut to the public was at
Barber.
Barber this year.
Oh, so that was the planetary debut.
Yeah. Yes.
Wow.
Now it's been seen in Germany by I think some press types and some insiders and whatnot.
Does it still have the straight edge cross on the front nose? Yeah.
Yes. That's going to be the new signature headlight look.
Ugh.
Yep.
Wait, no, if you're a firefighter, half the guys that ride BMWs are firefighters. It's a Maltese cross headlight. We've had Maltese cross taillights for years. Why not a Maltese cross headlight? You know,
it's like a true X. It's not a Maltese cross. It's just a true X on the front, and it's an LED.
So you start with your straight edge.
And it's then, not a brown starfish like
nailed to the X.
Yeah, but I can't believe they took away the googly eyes. The googly eyes have been just the fucking standard.
You know.
Yeah. Everybody complained when they changed. Well, they put the BMW bump on the trunk of the car.
Right. Yep.
And everybody complains because the tombstones are ugly as shit on the front of the cars. Right. So you might as well do something stupid with a motorcycle.
Yeah. Well,
Pete, you said there's close to 150 motorcycles out there though from BMW.
All right, stop right there. Yes, there was, Chris. There was two truckloads full, and then the loads got swapped out while they were there, and then they actually brought in additional bikes. So. I don't know the numbers because I'm just an Indian there, not a chief, and I don't have to know those. But anyhow, there was at least 150 bikes there. Some of them were static displays.
Right.
Some of them were available for rides. The picture we're looking at right here, this guy was doing a police bike demonstration, and this was adjacent to the CEO for sign out. I saw this guy's act. His name's Quinn Redeker. I saw this guy's act no less than 8 times a day for 3 days. So I saw it 24 times minimum. But he's a retired CHP moto, and he could ride that R1200 like nobody's business.
Yeah, he's 100% on the metal. Yeah.
Bunch of RTPs on Gov Deals right now.
Yeah, yeah, tons of RTPs on Gov Deals at the moment. Yep. I've had a bunch of them. They're fun. They're fun bikes to have secondhand.
The state of Ohio is going to RTPs now. They're getting rid of their Harleys.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big deal. I can tell you from owning a handful of RTPs, I fucking love them. I absolutely enjoyed them. They're great bikes, super easy to own. Just understand there will be maintenance because they've been maintained by a police department. They usually get rid of them between 48 and 60,000 miles. So as long as you're aware of what kind of work needs to be done to a BMW at 48 to 60,000 miles, and you do that, you're going to have another 48 to 60,000 miles in your ownership. Ain't no big deal. So that's super cool that they were doing the BMW authority demonstrations.
And the area that he was operating in was probably 50 by 50. It was like a mini police rodeo. You got to look it up. I mean,
he ain't never going straight.
No, absolutely never going straight. Nope.
Just lock to lock, lock to lock, lock to lock.
The only chicken strip was the middle of his tire.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, you know, he gets all the secondhand tires.
Yeah.
From most of the riders, so he can use the outsides.
And I can tell you too, watching his act 24 times never got old. Watching him throw that bike around, what did get old was his jokes, because he had the same routine.
He's got the same patter.
He was wearing a microphone, so he's talking. You can see the speaker right behind his head.
So he's his own color commentary.
Exactly. And he had this whole act about...
Jackie Van Ham didn't come over with a script for him and help him out?
No.
No, mm-hmm. Man. Yeah. So he was his own color commentary. So he had the jokes.
Yeah, I mean, that's a loose description. Yes, he's a better motorcycle rider than he is a jokester,
a comic. Well, that's pretty badass.
Unlike Chris Smith.
Well, yeah.
Which is bad. But you know,
cops are known for their sense of humor.
Yes, clearly. Right. That's one of the main reasons they hire these guys. Yeah, because the way they can take a joke. Yeah, I mean that's. That's pretty cool. I want to bring up a picture about which is the new R1300 GS. So yeah, it's more svelte, it's more streamlined.
Yes.
Yep. It looks lighter. It looks smaller.
Yep. I'm waiting for the adventure version. I want to see what they do with that.
It's gonna be a Starbucks racing team.
That'd be fine.
Hey, the green and white.
They're still beautiful bikes.
I know. It's a gorgeous bike. And. That's one of those things. BMW made a commitment a long time ago to stick with that boxer motor. And they're not leaving it anytime soon.
That's their bread and butter since day one. Yep.
And we've been hearing rumors about this is constantly outdated.
They finally turned the K motor sideways.
Yeah.
Yep. And it took 30 years.
Yep.
Yep. So the boxer's not going anywhere.
Yeah. It's pretty, I mean, that bike right there, it's fucking good looking. I mean, that's a good looking bike.
And if you don't want a boxer off road bike, they have the 310 and the 800.
Oh, they have all kinds of not boxers. Yeah. But that's cool. So did you get to ride? Nobody got to ride the 1300.
No, it was not available for rides.
Yeah. Static display.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Now this next picture here, that's Reg Pridmore's bike.
Yes.
Which I got up close and personal with.
very intimate.
And they will have to sell the seat.
Yeah. Well, no.
That R90S, Pridmore's, that Pridmore's bike is, I mean, it's a massive piece of history. But also, it's kind of funny because I think every BMW cafe I've ever seen in my life owes itself to that. Because people saw that and went, I want that.
R90S Daytona.
I want that.
Yeah.
I want that bike. That's what I want. That's what I want to own. That's what I want to ride.
I always like the orange better than the gray.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Daytona.
Well, that's orange. That's what I want to turn the G400C into.
Yeah.
Because if you get the cafe parts from Europe, they come silver.
Yep.
So then all you got to do is do the gold airbrush.
Ghost it in.
You can buy that fairing from Parts Unlimited for like $35.
Oh, Vipers have been around a long time. Yeah, you don't want to put anything more expensive than a Viper on a G400C.
But no, but the thing is the one that they made specifically for the G400C comes with the whole package.
Oh, it does.
Yeah, it's nice. The cafe version of it.
Yeah.
It's so good.
Make one phone call, order one thing. Yeah, that's pretty cool.
Yep.
That's neat. So were you able to do any time on the track, fairing bikes around, did a lap for history or anything like that?
That's a lot of questions all at once.
Okay. I can break that down.
Okay.
Did you get to spend any time on the track?
Yes.
All right. Was it any of it at a speed higher than 35 miles an hour?
Negative.
I knew we'd get to the source of that. Yeah.
I can say that I rode a bike, an M1000 no less.
Whoa!
On Barber's track.
Barber.
But it was just like down pit lane or onto pit lane and then ferrying it back to the truck.
That's the same way that I tell my story about taking hot laps at Laguna Seca with Nicky Hayden and Ewan McGregor and Ben Bostrom. We were on 50cc Malagutis. I never went over 35 miles an hour, even through the corkscrew.
Doesn't matter.
Couldn't barely get up the hill prior to the corkscrew. but we got to ride on Laguna Seca with some big names, And I insisted that I go along just for safety in case any of the bikes would break down.
Sure.
I wanted to make sure I was there for it.
Since I don't think that THC is a single serving bottle, bro.
Yeah, what the hell? I saw that.
I like it. It's good.
Yeah, you do, don't you?
I like it.
I like it. It's good. And then so when you said you were able to move around the track at 35-ish miles an hour.
Well, they had a track day there.
Yeah.
Actually, it was for S bikes. They had S 1000 R's and double R's, and when the track day was over, we were sent over to get the bikes three at a time, bring them back to the truck again. Oh. Took us back in the minivan to get three more, bring them over. But they were sitting on the track. We had to drive them off
of
the track.
And who was doing the track day on those bikes?
Paying customers, but people that bike owners, well-heeled bike owners as well.
Oh.
So it was like a pay-to-play thing.
A pay-to-play.
Or run what you brung as long as you brung a S1000 double R. And then,
yeah, that's they do have branded like a couple of years last. I think last year, year before last, it was Triumph. They did the Triumph thing where you did the same okay. stuff. Like right. every year, they have a big giant sponsor.
So if you have that brand,
yeah,
you could do a track day.
Yep.
Amongst others of that brand,
exactly.
If you brought your own,
yeah,
or if you threw down a big enough pile of money, you could use a spec class loaner bike.
I assume that's what it was done. I don't know. I was just told to go get the bikes,
yeah.
and there was a bunch of people over there having a big party that we were just the help that went in to get the bikes.
Oh, man.
So if you came in on the helipad.
Yeah. I finally got it, dude. You know what the people at Barber didn't get this year?
What?
If we would have all come down like planned,
yeah.
it would have been like that shot at Caddyshack where all the caddies finally get to use the fucking pool.
Caddy's Day at Beachwood Country Club.
That is well stated, Sleep. I tell you. Because
it is from noon until noon 15.
It's like the carnies are here.
Yeah. And we all pile out of Phil's van and that's like great. there's a smoke cloud because of Sleepy that just flies out of it. Like, hey, we're here.
Oh, man.
Yeah. That's a good descriptor too, because Mid-Ohio is like carnies and a county fair.
Yeah, it is.
And Barber's like gone to Disney World,
which is
so it's a completely different experience.
Which is really funny. Being in Alabama, you'd figure there'd be a lot more carnies.
That's a good carnies. Point. That's a good point
because Barber is Alabama. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But I don't think there's a lot of that yeehaw that makes it through the front gate.
No, there really isn't.
Yeah. One of the things that John and I experienced a few years ago at Mid-Ohio is we were having this bonfire that got a little out of control.
And, Alex Tassie caught himself on fire again?
Nope.
We had one of those bonfires at Steve's garage, didn't we?
That was Steve's barn.
Or the
piece of land that used to be known as Steve's barn.
Yeah.
Well, one less fire truck showed up to the Mid-Ohio one. But after they took our fire down, they had to rebuild it for us because rules. And so this guy shows up and we were just doing a thing. We're just having a good old time. But a guy shows up who is the Mid-Ohio poster child. He's on a $375 Yamaha XS650. He has a DOT t-shirt on. He's got nothing in the way of safety gear. Shorts, check. Thrift store sneakers. Never not carrying a drink.
He's just riding it tiller style with one hand.
One hand.
Just sort of.
There you go.
And mind you, this is in the grassy, bumpy back parking lot area around a fire. He never, ever dropped out of maybe second or third gear. And he was never anything but wide fucking open. He never, in his entire time that he was at our site doing what he did, pronounced a consonant. His language was one of this. But he was flawless. I tell you,
John, I thought it was interesting. The change in the crowd.
Yes.
When he first came blasting through and everybody was kind of like, what the fuck? Hey, fucking guy. What the hell?
Do you know this? I had seven people say, do you know this fucking asshole?
And then, brah. And then, brah. And then everybody, then at a certain point, everybody was like, look at him fucking go, yeah!
That's the thing is, if you do it once, everybody thinks you're a jackass. If you do it twice, everybody's like, well, like, if you do it 16 times, everybody's like, all right, now you're going to get tired.
Well, it's a show.
He's going to wreck. No, he didn't wreck. He's going to go down. No, he didn't go down.
You know what it is? It's a sideshow. It's like the streets. If one guy goes into a burnout.
You said carnies.
if you said on the 200th lap, he's going to crash, mm-hmm. right?
Oh, yeah.
200 people that were standing around the fire watching this shit happen, and he's weaving in and out of all of us. I mean, legit, he is no. There is no planned course of action for him. He's perpetually sliding. And he's on the tires that came on the bike in 1972. At no point did he ever, ever have a straight line control. He went from a drift to a drift to a drift on no suspension.
Oh, just okay.
And he just had it. And he's jumping the fire. He's doing anything that we could put up. And people are like throwing a pallet out. And he's riding through the pallet. Like, the guy was legit a true artiste, right? He was an artiste. Now, I don't think that they get much of that at Barber.
Probably not.
No. Well, no, you're not going to get, you really are not going to get that. What
did
that guy
say? I think we got off, or was that, did you ever read the thing that the guy said?
Mm-hmm.
From the Barber thing. Wasn't there a big comment from the guy?
From which, who?
The one that started the whole Barber thing, saying that we owed something because we had never been to Barber. Weren't you reading it from a giant paragraph?
We actually had a Patreon. Yeah.
Didn't you? But did you read the whole paragraph?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Missed that part.
Well, I did. Sleepy? I did. And the point is...
Sleepy, how much of that did you pour
in? Some more.
The idea was that we steamrollered Tom when Tom tried to say, no, there's drinking and there's carousing and there's silly shit.
Yeah. Okay, but we had a live report from Nick. And he definitively said at 9 o'clock, yeah. It was crickets chirping.
Yeah.
Lights out.
He was scared. He was scared to start.
I'm not going to lie. At 9 o'clock, it literally is lights out.
Okay. What do you think? What was your?
I was getting out of there about 9 o'clock every night.
Yeah.
And I didn't give two fucks because I just wanted to go back and get something to eat and go to sleep so I can get up and do it again the next day.
You didn't feel like you were missing the party?
No, but it was pretty quiet when we were getting out of there.
There's a group. Dean knows these guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they have a party 5-10 miles down the road.
Okay. Now that's
the party
that I completely believe.
Yeah.
That there is a barn burner happening.
It has been happening for 20 years.
Outside of the auditory
range. I'll
tell you where the party is. Right across the street when you come into the facility. Bucky's? There's a huge Bucky's there.
Yeah.
And the Bucky's is like a nightclub. It's the first time I've ever experienced a Bucky's. And I was like, all right, I get it now, man.
Are they tailgating at Bucky's?
Oh, I mean, I walked in at 11 o'clock at night and bought like a pound of brisket. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
But I mean,
or you can get like a quart of banana pudding.
Oh yeah, and you're out of parking lot just hanging out. But I think the Louisville Vintage guys actually are the ones that actually hold the party down the street.
Okay,
that makes sense. I think they're associated with the Kentucky Kickdown guys. So
perfect.
That makes, now that I've seen Mid Ohio, this makes more sense.
Yes, it does, because
well, there's a couple of the Kentucky Kickdown guys that actually work on the truck with me.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. So.
Oh. What was their report?
Well, they were working just like I was, we weren't working shoulder to shoulder because they had other areas of responsibility. Yeah, now we have to set up the truck, we have to get the bikes together. But for the 8 hours a day that we were there, or 10 hours a day that we were actually shipping bikes in and out, we weren't riding together or working together.
So Barber equals dick in dirt. Okay.
Well, I've done the booth for more than one of my vendors at Mid Ohio. And, you know, that idea that old men are going to show up at 7 o'clock in the morning, expect to take a test ride.
Yeah.
There's old men at 7 o'clock in the morning have got a very well-coordinated schedule of test rides they're going to be taking. And they plan to take them all. And they expect you to be fucking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed, getting them trained on the bike, getting them out, leading the ride.
Look, man, this coffee's got a shot of Jameson's in it. You're just going to take the bike and go.
Well, but no, because a lot of those ones that I had to lead a ride.
Yeah.
And... Oh, you know what? You think riding a motorcycle around Mid-Ohio for 8 hours a day, being followed by a bunch of riders is going to be fun, but it's not. You're herding cats. And whether you're the sweeper or whether you're the leader, it can be fucking problem, man. It can be a real problem. And not everybody that takes a bike out for a test ride is a great rider, you know? So... And then you're in the booth with Disruptive Technology. How many times did you hear it doesn't have a clutch lever?
Actually, it was funny because when you're trying to sell interest in the bike, people would be like, oh, yeah, tell me about that. It's pretty cool looking. Or other people would just like roll their eyes and like, not for me, dude, you know, which I respect that.
Right.
But we were busy the whole time and we were sending out 60 rides a day, I think. Yeah. So over an 8-hour day, you know,
it's a lot of volume. Yeah. That's tons.
Dude, I would have been messing with people. Like the people that were like not for me, be like, I take that personally as I'm the designer.
Oh. Well, actually, we were really told to be minding our P's and Q's, so that wouldn't have... That doesn't fly.
So Sleepy, if you decided to show up and like just stand in the booth and not be affiliated with it, go, really?
Yeah. But as he said earlier, it wasn't just you're wearing a BMW shirt.
Right.
The Germans are there.
The Germans.
And you have to be very careful because you can't tell a German just by looking at them. They could sneak up on you.
Okay, but if it's the last day of the thing, what are they going to do?
There might be like secret shoppers there too. They come up and like ask you a question just to see if you know the answer to it.
Ooh.
I don't believe that happened to me. I mean, it may have.
So coming from my end of the spectrum, talking about an electric scooter.
You're on the fucking spectrum.
I am on the spectrum. What is the failure rate of the electronic battery management system?
We're not talking about that. Oh, he wouldn't know. He was with us.
They don't provide us that information.
They work 100% of the time. They're German.
I was going to say 0%. Right.
Yeah.
What happens when I press the button with a picture of a helicopter on it? A helicopter comes to get you. A special BMW helicopter shows up.
For the price of that thing, it probably would.
No, you know what, dude? BMW makes a call, and they have that. You know, the U.S. has the high energy pulse weapon,
right?
So BMW, like, they just dial it down. And they shoot your scooter.
They shoot the electrons. All the electrons. All the electrons. You know, this is why the government stole Tesla's all Tesla's technology. Tesla, not the car manufacturer, but, you know, Tesla, the
Nikola
guy. Nikola Tesla.
Right. The over-the-air electric guy.
Stole his book of all of his gear because now they sell the Death Ray, but tuned down so they can charge BMW motorcycles.
Yeah, exactly.
Pete, you've been a member of the BMW Motorcycle Owners of America for many, 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 many years.
I have.
Have you ever had to use the roadside rescue of that membership?
I've used it socially. Like, I'd be in some place, need a place to stay. I might call somebody that offers bedroll space or a spare room or sleep in the garage kind of thing. And I've used it for that purpose. Now, I have received calls for rescue calls to go out and help somebody.
Give somebody a hand.
Somebody passing through gets a
flat
tire or whatever, you know. I've gone out and rescued several people.
Yeah, I've had my my American Motorcycle Association membership for 20-some years, right? And I have used my AMA towing twice for other people that were in a bad way, right? And they're remarkably cool about it. It's, you know, it's my motorcycle. They ask you the VIN, which I think is hilarious because everybody in the American Motorcycle Association owns fucking 19 motorcycles, right? They always ask VIN. I'm like, yeah, this is the VIN. And I've never had a problem. I've never been denied any, you know, services getting a bike towed in or a bike towed out. I've had customers that are out in the field that are in a really bad way and they need a tow in a fucking terrible way. And I've been like, okay, let me make a phone call for you, right? That kind of a thing. But that is the thing is you've ridden BMW motorcycles hundreds of thousands of miles in some pretty fucking weird places. And for you to be able to say, like, you've got a better track record than Ewan McGregor and Charlie Boorman when it comes to not needing to get pulled off the side of a mountain.
Well, we just did out in South Dakota.
Yeah, tell me more.
I wasn't on my BMW, though.
Oh, what? Really?
We had one Honda Monkey and two CT90s.
Oh, wow.
With Chinese motors.
Okay, yeah.
Brother Tim's with me and a friend of mine from Seattle.
So you had one modern monkey?
Yes.
You had one modern monkey and two Piranha
CT90s.
Right.
Yeah.
So what happened?
So we went out to Black Hills of South Dakota for we're going to ride one of the BDR routes they just established out there. They just released it during Sturgis, like in July or August, whenever that happened. So we were there in September. And we're going to ride the BDR-X, which, for those not familiar, the BDR routes, backcountry discovery routes, they cross numerous states. I think there's 15 of them or 18 of them maybe now. But they're one way across the state. So they've come up with these BDR-X routes, which are a circular loop on the same sort of off-road trails.
Right.
So that's what we went out to do, the BDR, Black Hills BDR-X. And two or three days into it, I think that one's 375 miles or somewhere.
Oh, good loop.
Yeah, nice loop. Should be 3 or 4 days on a small bike, right? Going, you know, not knocking yourself out. You could do it much faster than that if you want to, but I don't know if it was day three.
Yeah, 300. Look at that. 355 miles in three sections. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So
that's pretty great.
We drove out there. The top of the loop there is Spearfish at the 12 o'clock of the loop. So we posted our vehicle in Spearfish. My buddy drove in from Seattle to Spearfish, which incidentally, Spearfish is like almost exactly halfway between Seattle and Cleveland. So that's how we decided.
Is it?
That's how we decided to meet there. It's about 1,200 miles for each of us to get there. And we started doing the loop in a counterclockwise direction.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And day two or three, we get into some real mud. I mean, some really, really bad mud. And you know, a CT90 does not have much fender clearance. And the mud starts packing up under the fenders between the tire. And it was like diminishing clearance on my brother's bike on the rear fender. He had like maybe an inch of clearance at the rear of the fender, but towards the front of the fender was only like a half an inch of clearance.
Packs in, yeah.
So it was packing in. Yeah, the mud was packing in. And then, I don't know if you know this, but there's a lot of limestone out there. You think of like Mount Rushmore.
Right.
That's all limestone.
They didn't have to import Mount Rushmore?
I didn't know.
It was already there.
Maybe it's granite. I don't know. I'm not a fucking geologist over here, right? But anyhow, there's a lot of rocks. And all these rocks and mud are getting impacted or getting compacted into his wheel fender clearance, and then the wheel just stopped spinning completely. We took the front fenders off of both of the CT90s.
So mud with aggregate in it.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
Isn't that like cement?
Yes, exactly.
It's a bonding agent.
Pretty much, yeah.
So Brother Tim commences to burning out his clutch trying to make the wheel go around.
Oh, no way!
And we're like laughing our balls off, right? We're like at the middle of nowhere. So we're figuring like, we'll just drag the bike out here. You couldn't even push it through the mud because obviously the wheel wouldn't turn under the motor power. You're not going to like push the bike either.
And anybody who knows anything about, you know, Trail 90s or the Piranha-based motor knows that that's not a clutch that can be restored.
No.
So
no.
Once it's fucked, it's fucked.
It was thoroughly fucked.
So even if you unfuckered, I mean, dug out the rear tire.
Remove all the fenders.
As soon as you drove it some more.
We did that a couple times, right?
And you could disimpack it, but it just re-impacted.
You ever roll a snowball down a hill and winter?
So it's just picking up more boogers.
Oh, yeah.
And just...
He thought he lost first gear. He's like, I'm in second gear, man. Right. I just can't. First gear is gone. And, yeah. Well, no, it was just...
No.
It was all gone.
You just went through the
mud
clutch.
Mud and clutch, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So... He's dead in the water, and we're like...
And is this on leg one?
No, this is like midway through leg two.
I mean, okay.
Day right. two or day three. I don't even remember what day we were on, but anyhow. So we said, well, Tim, he's a smoker, so he's got a lighter. I was like, you can start a fire.
Right.
Maybe we'll be back before dark. Maybe we'll be back in the morning. I don't know. Here's all the food we have. We had like some peanut butter and some gummy bears, whatever. We gave him whatever food we had. And we gave him whatever water we had, and we said, settle in for a cool night. You know, we'll be back when we get here.
It looks like between where you were going, between stop two and three, the big city's going to be Custer.
Custer is not a big city either.
I know.
And we had come through Custer, so we were just past Custer.
Yeah.
So the two running bikes, we backtrack.
Yeah.
And we go about 8 miles. We come to a ranch. It's a Sunday afternoon. And... Well, the first ranch we come to was like dead, nobody there, and all boarded up, but it didn't look like any sign of activity. We finally come to a ranch where like the barn door's open, and there's a car and a dog running around and shit. So we go up and we knock on the door. This guy comes to the door. He looks like out of Central Casting for South Dakota rancher. Guy's got like a leather face and a flannel shirt and Wrangler pants and cowboy boots and everything, and we're like, hey, we got a buddy stranded about 8 miles out. We had marked on the GPS where he was.
Sure.
And this is like not 8 miles like down a nice road.
No.
This is 8 miles up through Hell's Half Acre, right?
Yeah.
And we're like, we need a rescue of some sort. And like four-wheel drive. Oh, he says, what do you need? Like a four-wheel drive truck. Or he had like a John Deere Gator type vehicle sitting there. I said, or something like that John Deere right there would be perfect. And this guy says, well, do you know how to ride that thing or drive it? And I was like, yeah, I can figure it out. I know how to drive it.
It's a fucking John Deere, man.
Yeah, right. It's like a golf cart.
It's a golf cart.
Yeah.
Right.
And he's like, oh, what the hell? I'll go with you.
Nice.
So this guy's going to go with us.
Oh, nice.
But now we got the two bikes plus the rancher plus we got to pick up Tim.
Yeah.
So we got four guys and we got to get the bike. So we got to get four guys and a bike in a John Deere Gator. We're like, that's probably not going to happen.
That's not going to happen.
So I said, I'll go back on the monkey. You guys follow me. So we sent two guys.
All right.
The rancher and my buddy Jeff from Seattle.
Yeah.
And then I'm riding the monkey out there. We get back to my brother, and we've only been gone like 2 hours.
Okay.
And he's like, oh my God, I'm glad to see you guys. He goes, I thought I was going to be out here all night, you know?
Yeah.
And,
He's eating all the food and drinking all the water.
He's smoking all the cigarettes.
He's out of like the last Slim Jim.
He's already burned his motorcycle for signal flare.
Right.
Signal flare.
So we throw the bike in the back of
the gator
thing, which has like a 4-foot bed, a tiny little bed.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't have any straps to strap it down. So we're all taking our belts off and trying to like strap it down with our belts.
Yeah.
And then I tell Tim, like, you're riding in the back.
Yeah, you're holding your bike. Yeah.
So he jumps in he's in the back, and then the two guys in the gator, and then I'm still on the monkey.
Yeah.
We ride all the way back to the ranch.
Shit.
And it was like a slow go. I mean, because you had to go slow because it was the terrain, and you didn't want to lose the bike or my brother out of the back. And the rancher then says, well, what are you guys going to do now?
Yeah, because the bike is still broken.
And we're still 15 miles. Now, or at least we're on a gravel road, which it's 15 miles into Custer from there.
Oh, shit.
So,
I
asked the rancher, I was like, well, can
we go back, go the other way to Wind Cave?
Yeah. We'd already been there. No, we went to Wind Cave the next day. But anyhow,
oh, you did? Okay. Yeah. All right.
Which is like the butthole of the world, by
it
the
is.
Way.
I've been there, yeah.
Okay. I thought it was going to be like some big cave. It's like a little
weird.
Like
I thought it was going to be in Arkansas.
There ain't nothing. I've done this loop, you know, this thing, but I've done it on roads.
Okay.
On gravel roads and stuff. And I've been to this area when I went to Sturgis, and people are like, oh, you got to go do this. You got to make sure you go to Wind Cave. You got to go to Custer. And I did this 600-mile freaking trek over 3 days, and this was not BDR. This was on roads. Oh, Johnny! And I can tell you that statement of it's a butthole is completely accurate. Yeah.
My apologies to the Native Americans out there because it's sacred to them, but I'm like, I was a little underwhelmed, I gotta tell you.
Super underwhelming.
Hey, Phil, I just discovered something.
It is not Labufadora.
Since he said the words BDRX.
Right.
Yeah. I decided to go look up BDRX.
Yep.
Now, if you go up on that page to the pull-down menu, there is a BDRX.
There is.
In Pennsylvania.
That's the closest one. Yeah.
That's the closest one. Yep.
I'll be doing it next year. Yep. Anyone wants to join?
Well, that's the bigger question. Is now we've been talking about all this, what a buddy can do.
We're going to get to that.
Ah.
So getting back to the story, folks.
So back to the story.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So we're at the ranch, and the rancher says, well, what are you guys going to do now? And we say, can we leave the bike here? Well, we got a vehicle up in Spearfish, which is 100 miles north of
us. Yes, it is.
On paved roads.
Right.
Through Spearfish Canyon, which is spectacular. But anyhow, he's like, yeah, no problem. He said, if I'm not here, I'll just be sitting beside the barn there. You guys come back and pick it up whenever. So.
But wait.
Yeah. How does Uncle Tim get into Custer?
You have three guys and two bikes.
Yeah.
Uncle Tim's got a pretty skinny ass, right?
He does. So. He's a narrow fella. Yeah. He's a narrow fella.
So I put him on the back of the monkey.
No fucking way.
So we're doubling on the monkey. Oh. We're doubling on the monkey.
On the Honda suspension?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh.
That's the only suspension we had.
You go and do something like this and totally redeem yourself.
Exactly. Thank you.
I'm so glad you had the quote.
I'm literally sitting.
Give him more drops.
I'm sitting balls on the gas tank. My brother's like saying he's going to fall off the back. I think he's sitting on the.
Well, your brother's all legs.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Well, he's got no place to put him.
He's all legs and arms.
He should have wrapped his legs up around you. That's
he put his feet on the pegs.
Did you two up to Spearfish?
No. We two upped back to Custer.
Okay.
And now we're in Custer.
Right.
And it's starting to rain.
Yeah.
And I told him, I was like, okay, there's a main road here. The main road goes up to Hill City, which is where we had a room.
Okay.
I said, you got to throw your thumb out.
Yeah.
And so. I ended up, the two running bikes, we ride back to Hill City.
Right.
And my brother hitchhikes back up to Hill City.
He did?
Gets a ride almost immediately with a guy who turned out to be this, like, raging Trump fanatic. And my brother had to listen to the Trump speech for, like, 25 miles in the car. But
He beat you back to the motel, too.
Actually, we got back almost exactly the same time.
No fucking way. Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I didn't think hitching would be that easy in South Dakota.
Well, he was standing out there with a motorcycle gear
he's
and
cute.
Holding the helmet. And
okay, so he's got a sympathy factor.
Yeah, exactly.
I was going to say, right. I know Tim enough to know I would not describe him as sexy. He's got a swimmer's build.
So, yeah, And then we can't get the parts to put the bike back together. Nobody out there has, there's no Piranha dealers. Actually, they referred us to Akron, Ohio
to warehouse.
Yeah.
To at motorcycle warehouse.
We're like, okay, well, that's not going
to
work.
I think that's funny. They referred you to the origin of the species in Ohio.
Yeah. So anyhow, long story short, the next day we rented a side-by-side and the three of us finished the BDR route on the side-by-side.
Oh, you did?
Which the two of us could have finished it on the motorcycles, but then my brother's sitting in the hotel with his thumb up his ass.
Right.
Which he was anyhow, but we said, hey, come on, you can only do so much of that.
Yeah.
and then
before you get arrested.
So we ran the side-by-side, finished the route, and then we went up to Spearfish, got the vehicle, drove back to the ranch, got the bike.
Okay.
Long story short, it was a great trip. We finished the route on schedule. A couple speed bumps, obviously.
Yeah.
And the funny thing was, the hotel we were staying at, there was other groups of big adventure bikes, you know, like KTMs and BMWs and whatever else, you know. And we'd be out riding on the trail, and we'd pass people like going the other direction, or somebody stopped to, you know, we'd stop and say, hey, you guys all right, whatever. And they're like, oh, you guys are the guys that are out here on mini bikes. We've been hearing about you guys. So we were kind of infamous out on the trail, like three guys out there on these...
On that BDR, do most of the people start it at the bottom and go up and clockwise?
Well, Phil, that's the beauty of the loop. You can start
you
anywhere.
You can pick it wherever you
and
want.
And it goes right back to where you started.
Exactly. Yeah. Right.
I'm particularly interested in how the monkey did. I mean, so you were riding the monkey.
The monkey ran great. One, it has a lot of clearance. There was no the mud pack was not an issue. Until I took off the sprocket cover on the side.
Okay.
And that, when I didn't do that till I got home. It was completely compacted with mud and chewed up gravel and other. I don't know how I didn't throw a chain, basically.
No shit. It had power. It had no problem. You were getting around pretty easy on it. Clutch didn't blow up or anything.
No. Like I had to adjust the clutch. I know I was wearing on the clutch. And I did put full knobby tires on. I put the Shinko Mobbers on it, which performed flawlessly. So, yeah, I was really happy with the way the monkey performed.
That's really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fantastic... I mean,
because technically the monkey bike, is a street bike for the most part, but it did just fine as, you know, an old CT70 would, you know.
Like for sure. Here's the only thing that...
apparently better.
...disintegrated on said monkey was I had a rack on the rear of it, and I had... some shit in the rack, on the rack. I had I got one of the small, like, Harbor Freight Pelican cases there. But the way the rack was designed, it was almost, like, cantilevered out. And it started sagging.
It's like suspicious gravel. When you look at it, because the two mounting points on each side for it are too close together. And you're like, there's no way that could carry any amount of weight after it. And a lot of these bikes, that's the way the racks are set up. When you
it's
guys,
like you need another strut somewhere.
You need another strut
somewhere. Right from the back of the rack down to the fender or someplace.
Well, Pete, when you guys did your TW trip and you fabricated all your own racks.
Yeah. Well, I had the cycle racks on mine, and my brother had fabricated his completely, but there was one piece that we fabricated that did fail when we were out in Colorado. Yeah. But we you know, a little weld here and there. Yeah.
But I mean that's interesting to see like what John's saying about the idea of the monkey surviving, a pretty fucking harrowing adventure, right?
Yeah.
A bike that nobody ever really at Honda said, this is an off-road vehicle.
I mean, do you even have a bash plate or anything on yours?
No.
No. So the
only thing I did was I put a Yoshimura exhaust on it, so I don't have all that.
The stupid, it goes back and squiggles around, and it's about the size of your pinky thing that goes, you know.
Under the case. It's
like, right underneath it.
It's like a P-trap that's under your sink, but it's an exhaust P-trap under the bottom of the engine.
That's a compression insurer.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that makes sure there's enough compression.
And you
there.
Still retained your legally required by the EPA catalytic converter, too.
Of course, I did, too. And I had a spark arrester in there, too, because I was on federal land.
We have to.
There, as far as you know.
Sure, as far as you know. I think about that. That's a pretty rad thing, but I'm sad Tim had to go through all that.
Well, he got some good riding in, and then the day on the side-by-side, too, was pretty much fun because, one, you weren't worried about falling over in the mud.
Yeah,
slippery stuff didn't even matter anymore. Big rocks didn't seem to matter anymore. And when we took turns driving. There was three of us. So when you weren't driving, you could really look around a lot more than you could when you were on a bike. You didn't have to concentrate on picking a line and stuff like that.
That's cool. That's a freaking neat adventure.
So it was a good adventure, for sure.
I think that's
That's pretty badass.
If you wanted to take that ride on like a normal, or like a Jeep Wrangler, could you do that?
No.
No.
No, there's skinny spots and just tough spots.
Side by side could do it, but.
Yeah. Side by probably because of the width of it, and maybe just because like maybe the horsepower to weight ratio. You know, if you have a built Wrangler, maybe, but
then you're on side by side.
You were on a pretty decent side by side then.
We were, yeah.
So basically, you're not saying the width, like, so I mean, any kind of off road, like actual like crawler buggy could probably do them, right?
I would think so.
Yeah.
How about a Suzuki Samurai?
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Yeah.
That's, I mean. And that's one of the funny things, the guys that do the Gambler, a lot of the vehicles that are doing the Gambler are completely inappropriate vehicles. You got hearses and shit that are jacked up and going out in the woods. But what always gives me great joy is seeing the small little vehicles like a Geo Prism,
yes,
that are jacked up and are running, you know, a 1 liter motor that's all they got. And it's a convertible and they're out there off-roading it. And they're just having the most fun in the world on a 2-wheel drive car.
The Pontiac Matrix.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah. I mean, inappropriate vehicles, because when I was a kid, if you had a 1978 Dodge Omni in 1987, right, 86, 87, you had a car that had $0 value, and up behind our high school, we had a whole series of trails that went back in there, and it was not uncommon for us to take thrashed-out Econo boxes and just bounce them off of trees and just run the living hell out of them with, you know, a front-wheel drive, you know, K car based thing, you know, like a true Chrysler, Dodge, whatever the fuck it was that was cheap or free. And it was a big part of my childhood growing up is being in the woods on a vehicle that really didn't belong in the woods.
Well, there's something to be said about doing a adventure on an inappropriate machine.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. There's the magic there. The magic is, well, the idea of inappropriate.
When Chris and I were in Morocco, we met a Portuguese kid had been on an around the world journey on a Honda Monkey for 3 years. And we met him.
Yeah.
We met him in Morocco.
Was this a modern monkey?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
That we met this kid in Morocco, yeah, and he was heading north and he was going to be in Portugal like 2 weeks later to finish his around the world trip.
Okay.
He'd been on the road for 3 years, had two serious accidents, both times he was rear ended because he was going too slow, of course.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Arrested in Mexico for
not brabbing this.
No, it was like somebody stole something from him, and was like trashing the place, like it was like a nightclub or something. He was trashing the place, trying to get his stuff back.
No,
oh really?
Well, he had like an air tag on it. He knew the stuff was still there. Right. The people, it was a motel or a restaurant or something. They said, no, it's not here. It's not here. He's like, no, right. I know it's here.
Yeah, it's here.
So, but anyhow, he got arrested and
damn.
But he made friends with the the local. Mafiosos there.
Cartel,
and they,
right.
Yeah, so they took care of him and they got him out of everything.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's badass.
He says he's in a Mexican jail and he says like it's just a concrete cell and there's right. like a hole in the floor over there and there's this guy like shitting in the hole. Got like a tattooed face and stuff and just like giving him a cold blank stare the whole time he's doing it. And then he said the dude turned out to be like his friend.
Oh, really?
Yeah. The guy's like, I'm going to take care of you. And
right.
They got his stuff back. Like the cartel said, hey, bring this guy's stuff back. He's a friend of ours.
That's amazing.
The dude had stories to tell, like one after the other.
And I like the fact that he proves out that when you're on a motorcycle adventure somewhere, all of us got a chance to hang out with Moin Khan, who started a motorcycle around the world journey by getting in a massive motorcycle crash in like Romania and was hospitalized for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks after a massive motorcycle crash. Oof. Because his dumbass thought he was going to do an around the world adventure riding tour on like a Honda CBR. Completely the wrong trip for the bike for the job, completely the wrong everything, gets in a massive, massive crash and is hospitalized in a language in a country where he speaks, does not remotely speak the language. And is sitting there and can't communicate except for through Google Translate. And he's in a hospital bed, convalescing, and he has to rebuild his motorcycle for parts that his friends are mailing him. People that are following his trip are mailing him parts. And he's got broken legs and broken arms, and he's trying to put a motorcycle back together so he can leave, you know, Romania, wherever. I'm sorry, I'm sure I've got that wrong. But when you think about that story, that idea of being a motorcycle adventurer just means having the wrong gear for the job, really. Because the right way to go around the planet is to use an airplane. Yeah. And anything less than an airplane is probably the wrong tool for the job.
You met Marcus, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, Marcus is crazy.
Yeah, but these people who choose to do things like a Vespa around the planet, because I have, that's what I like to do.
Oh, yeah.
And when you say you run into a guy on a monkey bike.
Yeah.
It was in Marrakesh, yeah.
God, it's amazing. I mean, that really is.
At that's, least on a monkey, you can like pick it up.
Well,
you can drag it. You know what I mean? Like, it's not.
You
like,
can put it on an airplane.
Yeah, and there's also there's no place you can get a monkey stuck where a couple of people can't drag it out.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Whereas you watch guys on gold wings that get stuck places they shouldn't be going, or guys on big heavy bikes that get stuck going someplace they shouldn't be going, and you can't just grab it and drag it out. You take somebody who decides to travel around the world on a Kawasaki KLR 650. By the time they get all their shit on it, it's a 700-pound vehicle.
Yeah.
And if you end up at the wrong side of a ditch, you can't pull it out yourself. You're going to be paying somebody with a tractor to come and get you. You know, that's kind of, and that's the situation you got in on this, you know, Black Hills Discovery route.
It's like you said too, like before when you talk about AMA towing coverage and stuff, it's like you can have safety nets in place, but don't worry about what's going to happen when you go out there, because somebody's always going to be, want to be part of your adventure. They're going to help you get out of a jam.
Yeah.
You find a common ground with somebody.
Apparently, find common ground with an MS-13 member who's got...
Exactly.
Get all your shit back for you.
That's an extreme example, but myself is like a retired fireman. If I got in trouble somewhere, I would go to a firehouse and say, hey, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
This is who I am. This is my situation. Do you know anybody can help me out? Do you know somebody has a truck? Do you know somebody has whatever kind of tools, or I need some workspace, or I need whatever you need, man.
Oh, yeah.
And somebody's going to step up for you.
Absolutely.
I think if I was going around the world, I'd want to deposit like $5,000 with the Bank of Phil.
Oh, yeah.
And just be like, okay, so I'm going to give you this pile of money.
But
and when I get fucked up, I'm going to call you, and you're going to send parts and shit.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
This is my, like,
we're going to make a phone call. I have a very special set of skills.
You know, this is not a bad side hustle.
To be a, what do they call that guy?
A support hoe?
A fixer.
A fixer, right? A fixer.
Yeah.
There was that TV show years and years ago, like, I will take no payment from you, but someday I will call with a favor. The Equalizer, right?
The Equalizer.
And like, that's that deal where you think about the times that, I mean, I was busted down in Germany and I left a note on a guy. I saw a vintage Vespa. I left a note in the guy's seat. It's cool bike, whatever. This is where I'm staying. And that guy couldn't help me enough. Like, it was like in Arabic countries where their job, like it's part of their religion to help you. They're not allowed to ask you why you're here for 3 days. So for 3 days, they got to feed you, they got to house you, they got to give you water. They can't even ask you why you're in their house for 3 days. And by then, you've probably got your shit together. But that's part of their religion. That's part of their culture. That's part of their code. And when you look at that and you say, wow, that's remarkably cool, it makes me feel like a grade A prick for passing that guy in the broken down fucking diner the other day because I was like busy. And I was like, oh, shit.
Hey, you know what? He knew better.
Turned around and helped him.
Knew better.
Yeah, it's just that kind of a thing. So.
I mean, the last time I passed a broken down Harley on the side of the road, I was wearing all linen.
Oh,
so
yeah.
I went, no.
It can't do that.
I think it's also a little different if you pass a guy on a broken down Dyna on Route 90.
Oh, exactly.
About 50 million people.
Yeah, right, and he's got his cell phone out already.
That same guy was out in the middle of Marrakesh.
He's on AAA.
And he just threw me the bird because I'm riding a Vespa.
200 miles from anywhere.
Right. Yeah, that's true. And that is absolutely true. That's a big deal. So speaking about adventures and speaking about adventure riding, adventure biking, if you will, using the wrong tool for a job.
No. I mean, you'd have to stop just to see how fucked he was. Like, okay, hey, how's it going, bro?
That's bad. That's
I tell you
bad.
What, I'm just gonna keep going.
The good thing is Harley offers roadside assistance.
I think you should join the AMA right now.
I think the best thing for you is for me to get back to civilization and tell people you're here.
You know, I can't help you, but what I can do is let others know about you. The story of this fuck up will live on in legend.
Amazing.
Well, the funny thing is, you can have a trip that goes perfectly well.
Yeah.
Nothing ever breaks down. You don't run out of gas. No flat tires.
Right.
You know, you don't get lost. It never rained. And you don't remember the trip.
Ah.
But the trip where you're like, hey, remember the time we had to get that rancher to come out on a Sunday afternoon?
And
you remember that shit.
Yeah.
I recently just found a Chrysler LeBaron convertible.
I saw it.
White on white with a stick shift and the V6. And my buddy from college, my roommate, had the red on red. And we drove this thing because we were talking about the trips that you always fucking remember. He had one. Yeah. I told him not to buy it. He fucking bought it. Yeah. We had to escape Cape Hatteras during a hurricane, following my dad, dragging a bass boat of my former brother-in-law. In a red convertible, yeah. LeBaron.
Yep.
And the only thing, like, this is like the fucking 8-hour tour fucking trip from hell.
Sure.
And me, my friend, and my cousin are all in this car looking at this thing going for 8 hours looking at nothing but this fucking bass boat. And after a while, the joke became, goddamn bass boat. Now,
yeah.
I've been to Hatteras a million fucking times. I couldn't tell you any of those trips.
No.
That trip, I will remember forever. You'll remember so you're forever. Absolutely correct.
Well, who remembers when Adam Constantine talked about getting out of Key West when the hurricane was coming in there? That was a great story.
Hurricane Adam
man.
Is a great story. It's still one of my favorite podcasts.
Mine too.
Look it up. It's called Hurricane Adam.
And you were speechless because Adam had the floor the whole night.
I was shocked.
That was probably the least words that Phil ever
absolutely
on a podcast. Adam was holding court, man.
Adam's just sheer balls bravery of like, well, we're probably going to get flooded. So I'm going to tie my scooter to a tree. That type of forward thinking is like looking ahead in the future and saying, well, the water's probably going to be about 7 feet deep here. So if I tie my scooter to the tree, it'll still be there when I come back because palm trees tend to weather those things.
I'm going
to
wade out in the gator-infested mangroves
and
drag my boat out
This is the point where I remind you that I had a watermark in my garage in New Orleans that told me how high I had to put my shit.
Right. So up on the screen in front of us right now, you guys are going to see a map of Ohio.
Yeah.
You know. And so John and I, after the podcast last week, we've been talking about Iron Buddy and this idea of Iron Buddy. And the original idea of Iron Buddy is we're going to do some sort of a closed course, and we're going to run buddies around in circles for about 24 hours. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And one of our listeners up in Minneapolis chimed in and said, hey, dumbass, you know what you should do is rather than running the scooters around in a circle for 24 hours, you should make it more interesting. And we were trying to come up with a way, since all of our friends that have made ugly noises that they want to participate in this dumb event are coming in from very long distances and making huge sacrifices. Well, why don't we piggyback it with something that they already were going to show up for? As I call it, a twofer. I like twofers. If I'm driving one time and you can give me two adventures, that's a great time, right? If I can drive there, I was going to drive there anyway. Just give me something else to do while I'm already fucking there. So, starting and stopping at AMA Vintage Days, you're already there. Most of us get there on Thursday. Unless you're sleepy, you get there Wednesday night. Sleepy can hold the fort down at Wednesday night, but Thursday's the day most people show up. A 24-hour trip, it's a relay race. So, wouldn't it be fun if you look at that map? We all see where Mansfield is. That's basically where Mid-Ohio is. On that map, I wonder if it would be possible for you to ride a bike for 6 hours in a direction away from Mansfield. What would be a good destination away from Mansfield that's roughly 6 hours away?
You're talking 300 miles.
I am talking
250 to 300 miles
if you're
Mansfield
60 mile an hour kind of person.
That's like Lexington, Kentucky or something.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? And the idea would be that there'd be a two-man team on this leg, and maybe John would be driving the bike for the first half of the leg, and I would be in the truck. And then when we got to Lexington, John would get in the truck, and I'd get on the bike. And the bike would come back to Mid-Ohio.
I think it's going to be, I run out of tank of gas.
Yeah.
We stop to get gas in the bike. We gas up the truck.
Exactly.
We switch. It's probably going to be a flip-flop back and forth.
I agree.
During the whole thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the bike and the man come back to Mid-Ohio.
But to be clear, we'll be on opposing teams.
You bet your ass we will.
But now you have to have a buddy that has a title and a plate instead of
Why are you getting the law involved?
I'm just saying.
I'm going to think about the number of motorcycles in my garage right now that don't have titles. Okay, I have a number in my head.
I'm going to think about the number of motorcycles in my garage that don't have license plates to go with them. I have another number in my head.
The great Kreskin says.
Here's what I'm going to tell you. Not having a license plate or a title has never stopped me from riding a motorcycle.
Steve, does your buddy have a license and a title?
Yes.
Right. Congratulations.
My buddy has a title now.
Right. The point being that I'm not that worried. You know, for the odd soul that might show up with a bike without a title, if his...
That's on you.
Balls are big enough.
Yeah, right.
Right. If you drive outbound 6 hours and you turn around and drive back, your destination for that is mid-Ohio, and you'll be back 12 hours later.
You're probably not going to get pulled over for speeding.
Well, this is now we're starting to play with somebody else's rules. Now we're starting to talk about the Lake Erie Loop. And the Lake Erie Loop is up to 200 cc's. Now,
it's not a race.
It's not technically a race, but whoever gets back first gets an award. Where I come from, that's kind of a race, right? Nope. John came back first. He got a trophy that said first. I got back first. I got a trophy that said first. It's not a race. It's a charity event, right? But we all understand that the idea of limiting it to 200 cc's is so that the idea is the equipment that's out there probably shouldn't be able to, you know, rack up too many speeding tickets. And if the rule is the name of the event is Iron Buddy 24, probably not going to rack up too many speeding tickets. But if you do engage any traffic enforcement officers and you do get a speeding award, well, you earned that. That's part of your event. Part of the Lake Erie Loop that made it interesting and fun was to not get the speeding ticket. Not because you couldn't afford the ticket, because it would slow you down while the officer lectured you or taught you things you didn't know or asked for your credentials or towed your vehicle. The idea was just to not have that interaction. So, you know, being smart, flying under the radar kind of thing.
So we're saying you don't actually have to ride for 24 hours.
No, not at all.
But you have to take a route that would almost have to take you 24 hours. So now if you can do that faster, that's
right.
Good for you.
Good for you. And the idea is that the start point, the middle point, and the end point are all mid-Ohio, are all at AMA Vintage Days. I wonder who's going to be at AMA Vintage Days. Oh, just about every fucking buddy we know. And wouldn't that be a great place to welcome the group on the first leg back 12 hours after they leave? Celebration, fanfare.
And you're only going to lose 12 hours of your mid-Ohio experience.
Thank you.
And you know, if you're there for right. 4 days.
The most it's going to cost anybody who wants to participate in this is what John says, 12 hours of their day. 6 hours riding the bike, 6 hours in the truck. Now, if you're so soft you can't handle giving up 6 hours on a bike and 6 hours in the truck, I've ridden around AMA grounds on grass for 6 hours before. This is going to be a little easier than that, probably. But the idea being, we start, we stop. The morning group goes out, the first batch goes out. They go out, they come back, and when they come back, it's 12 hours later. Now, we're going to have a party for those people. We're going to welcome them back triumphantly. We also might have some challenges to fuck with them a little bit, because now they're back at camp, you know, and we can torture them a little bit, torture them, torture their bikes, maybe force them to do some maintenance under gunpoint, things like that, before the second group goes out and they go off for the next 12 hours. And then when they come back, guess who's going to be there waiting for them? Everybody. And that's going to be the triumphant return, which is probably going to make for excellent video. Probably going to make for excellent stories about the adventures that just happened that day. And if we do that on the Thursday of the event, everybody's going to have material to talk about the entire rest of the time they're at AMA Vintage Days. People with cameras might actually have the opportunity to interview some of these people. Hell, some people might pick up sponsors. This event could actually get eyes and seed the clouds for a future event that's equally as stupid.
We just have to figure out the launch times.
Well, we do. So we got to sit there with a clock.
Okay, so say it starts at noon on Thursday.
Yep.
Well, the first team has 12 hours.
Comes back at midnight.
They'll be getting back at midnight.
That's right.
Good for them.
Good for them. Party on, Wayne. Party on, Garth.
Second team heads out.
They start at midnight.
At midnight.
Oh, that's not so great.
Well, they don't. Here's the thing, though. I don't think they have to. If you take the times. So when people leave, they check in and they get back.
Uh-huh.
You can click a time.
Uh-huh.
Then, so they leave at 12, get back at midnight.
Yep.
The next group starts at 6.
Oh, How about this?
So you're saying cumulative time?
No.
Yeah.
2 days. It starts at noon on Thursday.
And it starts at noon on Friday.
And then that's the first leg. And then at noon on Friday, the second crew.
You guys are geniuses.
Is that way you don't, you know, nobody has to like.
Nobody has to drive through the night.
Yeah.
Right.
Because that'd be really pretty dangerous, especially.
Or start at 8 in the morning and get back by 8.
That's true. You leave in daylight, you come back in daylight. Chris is smarter than both of you.
Thursday, but not. But most people aren't going to be there Thursday at 8 a.m.
John's thinking about a drinker, like, I don't wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning. But the idea of leaving in the daylight and coming back in the daylight is a pretty great idea.
Yeah.
You could actually, in Mid-Ohio, you could easily do it at 9:30. You could leave at 9:30, come back at 9:30 at night.
And ahead.
You, yeah. You leave in the daylight, you come back in the daylight.
Yeah, that would probably be the best.
And the idea is that now, if you want to go out Ironman and do the whole 12 hours yourself on the bike, that's between you and your Jesus.
Or could we could just be punters and turn it into a 12-hour instead of a 24-hour.
No, but I like the idea of it being Iron Buddy 24.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Because the bike is going to be under some stress.
Okay.
But the bike does get the opportunity to get some maintenance between phase one and phase two.
What do you think?
Would you do it?
That doesn't sound like my cup of tea.
The guy who rides a circle around America on a fucking trail wing 200, a T-Dub 200.
What if you could do it on your monkey?
Could I do this on like Tuesday and then still get there back to Mid-Ohio on Wednesday?
So you don't. But you bring up a good point. So you're in the camp. You don't want to give up your Mid-Ohio time.
Yeah, I see.
You're not giving up 12 hours of Mid-Ohio.
I would say you could do this event at any time.
Right.
So why do it on top of Mid-Ohio?
Because then it turns into a virtual rally, and then it's like everybody's running their own event, you know.
I get what you say about
it. Because a lot of the people that we're hoping would want to do it with us
right.
are only with us right. at Mid-Ohio.
Exactly. You know what, though? I think Pete had a good idea. So Pete mentioned, okay.
One at a time.
But if people are excited about this and they want to do it,
right.
they're probably okay with taking an extra day or two off to do it. So he's kind of right. Like, why wouldn't we do this?
So you do it on Wednesday.
Yeah. Tuesday, Wednesday. Yep. Or even Thursday. Right. The second day is on Thursday. And so that they
anybody who's coming to Mid-Ohio has to extend their trip by a day or two.
Yeah. And so like they do the race. We do the race Tuesday, right. Wednesday, whatever.
Yep.
So that when it ends, we can have the party. Right. Now instead of Thursday night being boring,
right.
Thursday night's the end of the fucking Buddy 24.
Right.
So I guess we have to reach out to some of the fuckos and see what they're
enthusiasm. The fuckos and the fuckettes. Yeah. Right. And then John did come up with an idea. I fought very hard, and I'll admit, I fought very hard to have this event. The vehicle you're riding must have the word buddy on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And John.
Like monkey buddy.
I'm okay with anything like what we talked 170 or under.
Yeah. I think that's the deal. I think we have to open this up to monkeys, trail 125s, super cubs.
So what you're saying is we have to build a stencil that says buddy.
Well, I think we spray paint
buddy down the side of the.
I'm going to win it. I'm going to be in a buddy, so fuck you. So
I'll be bragging rights for the buddy right. bracket. You know, you could say, well, I'm in the buddy bracket.
Well,
I'm
how about actually this? Running a buddy. How about buddy. Like, as you've been to a million rallies and you know, there might be the core game, but there might be extra credit points that can add to your score to maybe help you.
Yeah.
I can tell you this. There'll probably not be any real trophies. There'll be maybe like stupid things.
We're
not going to have any trophies made.
Oh, I disagree.
You're going to make trophies.
I think I'm.
Do you have any bowling trophies we have in the back of the
show? No, I actually feel like this might be one of those times where it's time for a completely grandiose and senseless gesture.
Okay. Also, what about like the trophies I made for Mods versus Rocket?
Fucking amazing.
Yeah, repurposed
amazing.
Trophies.
And you know, especially if somebody wins it who's from far away, the trophy should be 6 feet tall and very heavy.
Right.
Mm-hmm,
right.
Mm-hmm.
Like
you're not going to be able to fly with this.
Historically speaking, in the scooter rally world, the furthest ridden trophies were extraordinarily large and heavy because we knew the fella rode in and was going to be riding home.
Right.
I've got a bowling pin
and therefore had a trophy that was completely obscene and ridiculous.
Every one of my trophies was kinetic art and a weapon at the same time.
At the same time, exactly. But it might be time for a senseless, grandiose gesture of
we're bringing it back, trophy. Folks. We're bringing it back.
Right. Jesus Christ, if the way things go the way things are going, the trophy might be a buddy.
Yeah.
Right?
We can probably do that.
Anyway, just to be silly, just to be stupid. But anyway, I think the idea, though, is having launch point and their arrival point at Mid-Ohio, where all of us are going to be anyway.
or at least 90% of the people that want to event, you know, participate. 90% of the people that listen to this podcast right now go to Mid Ohio, right? So,
how many people do you foresee participating in something like this?
Between 1 and 200.
Okay.
Like when we first started talking about this, people exploded. Like people were calling.
I'm getting quite a bit of traffic right now from people that are like, okay, our four-man team is follows. They've already done strategy. They've already come up with ringer concepts.
And we didn't we didn't even define what the thing is going to be.
We're still in the air on what the final plan is going to be. Yeah, like,
right.
We are just spitballing this as we go along.
That's exactly right. But it is very funny how many people are like, this is something to...
So if you're listening to the podcast, you're going to be at Mid-Ohio, and you think you want to do the Iron Buddy 24-7...
Wouldn't be the bad time to start looking at a bike under 170 cc's now, would it?
And it'd be a good time for you to throw in, you know, any ideas you have. Oh, you would like this.
Oh, you know what you should do is come up with... You should come up with a passcode that if you listen to this, and you give them like $5 off any bike that you have that's under 170 cc's, if they'd like to participate.
I think we could arrange a $5 discount.
$5 discount.
Off of retail.
And not only that, we'll throw in a t-shirt.
Yeah, right. Tom's already having the idea of having a flock of 6 or 7 spec class racers that are just going to be there.
I can't find enough black body panels to
Who
do
says
the,
they
to
have
do the,
to match.
No, to do the Hertz gold the Shelby Rent a Racer.
Yeah, the Rent a Racers. Yeah, just show up.
Yeah, just
like,
show up.
Okay, what am I taking? You're taking that one over there.
Over
okay,
there.
Great. You're cool. Yep. Will it make it?
Sure. It says Buddy on the side. What are you worried about?
Hey, you got here first. You get your pick of the 6 bikes.
Oh, yeah.
Go out and find your bike, right? That's it. Did you bring a license plate?
They all come with one can of carb cleaner and a screwdriver.
They're all going to be slaughterhouse license plates.
I have no beef with that. You know what, though? Here's the thing. If anybody wants to be if you want to be a fuck knuckle and you want to really, really, really test my patience about the whole, like, well, my bike doesn't have a title and I won't participate in an on-road event if the vehicle doesn't have a title and a valid registration. I sell about 250 to 400 temporary tags a year.
Yeah.
And I can sell you a temporary tag for anything that has a VIN. And that temporary tag is good in all 50 states for 45 days. For an investment of $19.50. So if
Bingo.
That vehicle doesn't have a title or it's been stolen recently, that's between you and your Jesus. Let's put a temp tag on the back of that sumbitch and make it legal for 45 days.
Disclaimer, now, do not steal a buddy for this event.
Bingo.
You didn't hear me say that. Yeah, right. I'm just saying that. But in my shop, I know that if John shows up at my shop and he's got a bike he needs to ride this weekend, but he hasn't gotten the title sorted out yet. The state of Ohio has temporary tags for that exact reason. It's the reason
you have to get the bike to go get the, like, usually for the inspection, you need something to go get the inspection, right?
No. We're not doing an out-of-state vehicle inspection.
Oh.
That's a different form. All we're doing is a temp tag.
Right.
So if you go into the Dodge dealer right now and buy the Dodge truck, and all they have at the dealership is a stack of MCOs. They don't have any titles there. Mm-hmm. While their title clerk is processing the title, so you can drive your truck out of the Dodge dealership today, they put a temp tag in the back window. And your title hasn't even been cooked up yet. The people of the state of Ohio have never even met you or know about your Dodge brand new pickup truck.
There is.
But you are going to have a temp tag that says you can legally operate that vehicle anywhere in America for 45 days. Whilst your title is being formulated. While it's being created. Mm-hmm. And that rule holds true for just about anything that has a VIN. So it does give you a certain blanket of indemnity. And I'm not saying that I have met people that traveled to America and had vehicles that they wanted to drive across America and did so on a temporary tag for 30 or 45 days.
Dude, find a fucking bike that has a title. Just fucking get
it. Or don't. Just get a temp tag, man. Get a fucking T-plate. Run it on a T-plate. You'll be fine.
That's, you know, I'd
be more concerned about insurance, honestly.
I've got this issue right now. I have a red Buddy 50.
Yeah.
And it came from a state that did not issue titles for
exactly. 50. Right.
And now that the Vermont loophole's closed.
Right.
And the Maine loophole's closed. Yeah. And all the loopholes.
Yeah.
Now, Casola is my last Sure. $400 is a buddy.
Yep.
But if you absolutely needed to put that thing on the road legally, you could get a temp tag. You could call an insurance company, get insurance, 1-800, call the goddamn general, right?
Yeah.
And you could get an insurance policy in 7 minutes and you're fucking legal. You got a temp tag and you got insurance.
That's great. You don't need a title or anything for insurance, right?
No.
Or anything.
Oh, no.
I called and I could get insurance for $17.
Yeah.
For Piper's Quad Runner, because the one place I wanted to go,
right.
You had to have insurance. Well, they're like, yeah, a 1986 Yamaha Badger 80.
Yeah.
That's $17.
There you go.
You've got insurance on it.
That's all it is, man.
You don't even have to legally, they don't know anything about your ownership of the vehicle.
No.
If it's got a VIN number on it, you can insure it.
Right. That's all we care about for this event, especially. But I would think it would be really fun if we all had the ability to have the people, participants there all at the same time. That makes it great.
Yeah.
It also, the moving parts associated with doing it at a particular location and driving in circles for 24 hours, every single person that I talked to that had the kind of facility that we would use to do such a thing, were very interested in what kind of corporate insurance we had. Yeah. We're very interested in what kind of safety vehicles were going to be on site.
Who are you talking to, Barbara?
Exactly.
No, track's much smaller.
Hey, Phil.
Right. Hey, you ever been to Thompson?
Yes.
It's not what we would call the deluxe accommodations of most motorsports complexes, but even Thompson, as kind of like yeehaw as Thompson was, the second we said it was going to be like two wheeled vehicles going in circles, they were like, yeah, we need some insurance. Yeah. Yeah. So I didn't want to call up like Lloyd's of London and get an umbrella policy for 26 of my friends driving mopeds in circles.
Well, the other thing too is if you do Mid-Ohio,
yeah,
they do parade laps, right?
Yeah.
So isn't that going to be awesome with like all of the fleet of Iron Buddies?
That could be a requirement, is that in order to participate, you must pay the $10 to do a parade lap.
See?
And that part of your points would be the parade lap.
That's true. Yeah.
So I like that. So if you do the parade lap, we might do a bonus. Like if you do the parade lap, you get 30 minutes taken off your time.
There you go.
Yeah. That's a cool thing. That's a very cool thing. Because it starts and stops at the same point too, that's nice for timing purposes, is then we have a very, very easy way to keep track of, you know, where you are and when you are. And the Bill Maher rule about forcing people to get a fuel receipt somewhere is nice, because you could say that, you know, you're out, you're doing your own thing, but we're going to tell you at the very last minute which gas station you have to have a receipt from. And that's going to keep you honest, because, you know,
we have to pick one where the feeder is broken on the gas pump. So
yes.
You have to go inside.
You have to go inside and get a ticket. One of the guy from Minneapolis said another great thing that you can do, because he's done events like this before, is that you clandestinely approach one of the participants in each group to be an unofficial narc.
Oh, come on.
Yeah. So he's the guy who's keeping the eye out for cheaters, right? And so this way, if some team were going to be like, okay, we're going to take the bike, we're going to throw it in the back of the van and drive it 85 miles an hour to the spot and then pull it out, take the picture of it or get the fuel receipt or whatever, you make one of the guys.
But that was another facet.
Yep.
The speedometer on the bike.
Absolutely.
Has to be recorded.
You
can also tell everyone they have to use like a Rever app or something.
Sure. And that's a really good idea. That's a damn good idea.
I just did an organized ride. It was with Brian Shafran and Skidmark.
Yeah, the Skidmark, the 300.
Yep, we did that. And we all use Rever to navigate, because everyone has a phone now. Not everyone has a GPS.
That's right.
Roll charts are not really practical.
No, they're not.
Rever is the way to go.
Super easy. Anybody can do it.
And it documents your ride.
It sure does. And you can email it. So you can send it. So you can send it to whoever the official is, so that when you bring the bike in at, you know, your leg of the run, you've got to submit it. And you got to submit it.
So whatever it says on the odometer has to jive within reason with what's on the Rever app.
It's a good idea. It's a real good idea. Yeah, so that's cool. I like all those things. So it's really good ways to maintain it, but still have a party atmosphere when they come back in. The idea of having it be 12 hours of daylight for both days, it's still a 24-hour event. Yeah. It's still torturing the bike for 24 hours.
So what do you think about that, Sleepy?
What?
You caught it. You caught him in the middle of his dinner.
I was listening to this. Becky, I have Becky
laid.
To add right now.
Becky laid out the spread.
I just waited for you to take a
crap. Whole mouthful of food. Lay that on.
Craft, all right. Craft services is on point. This.
Anybody else got anything else? All right, Chris. Oh, Chris is grabbing a sheet of paper.
Oh Lord,
he's putting on his spectacles.
So anybody under the $10 Patreon level, you don't get this.
Oh my God, that's right. That's right. If you didn't pay $10 for the Patreon level, you can turn off now.
So after 35 years of marriage, a husband and wife came to see a therapist. When asked what the problem was, the wife went into a tirade about listing every problem they had had for years that they had been married. On and on and on. The neglect, lack of intimacy, emptiness, loneliness, feeling unloved and unlovable. An entire laundry list of unmet needs that she had endured. Finally, after allowing this for a sufficient length of time, the therapist got up, walked around the desk. After asking the wife to stand, he embraced and kissed her long and passionately as her husband watched with a raised eyebrow. The woman shut up and quietly sat down as though in a daze. The therapist turned to the husband and said, "This is what your wife needs at least 3 times a week. Can you do this?" He says, "Well, I can drop her off here on Mondays and Wednesdays, but on Fridays I go fishing."
I approve.
On Fridays I go on motorcycle rides.
Exactly.
Right?
Anybody else got anything else? No, man. Game on, man. Hey, I think that was a podcast. Everybody remember to ride fast and take chances. Play us out here, John.
Bum, 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 bum,